Alright, let's get this party started. God damn it, I'm fucking cranky already. Now I've just been dealing with idiots today. Idiots on the internet. The best kind of idiots in the universe. Oh god, so one of my web clients, I'm trying to work on his site. He's got this shitty hosting company. They don't even have, Randy, they don't even have cPanel. It's like their administrative thing. It's completely unusable. And it's so complicated. Like, who in the fuck, what hosting company doesn't have fucking cPanel installed? Jesus Christ. People, if you're gonna have a fucking website, okay, you've gotta stop fucking shopping with the fucking dollar. Alright, these fucking hosting companies, like, it's $3 a month, and you're all like, oh my god, I can have a website for $3 a month. Yeah, there's a reason. There's a fucking reason why it's only $3 a month, alright? I'm not saying you have to buy the motherfucking $40 a month fucking personal fucking unlimited server fucking hosting package, okay? But god damn it. Fucking Christ. Okay, the $3 a month web hosting shit is not a fucking option. God damn it. You fucking, yeah, it just pit. You people will fucking spend all this goddamn money on a fucking cell phone and a goddamn Apple fucking computer, but your web hosting is $3 a month. Jesus fucking Christ, people. Fuck! Hi! I'm the Great One himself. I am the motherfucking founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. Been on the internet since 1999. I've been podcasting for 11 years. 11. That's more than the $3 a month you're paying for your shitty website hosting. And I, the Great One himself, am fucking tired of dealing with idiots. And they're everywhere. God damn it, I'm surrounded by just fucking morons everywhere. The fucking morons, they don't stop. I've been, in addition to that, I've also been doing research for upcoming episodes of Stating the Obvious. As you hear me say all the fucking time, I have so much material. And sometime near future here, actually, since I wrap this book up, I think we're going to dive right in because the pile is getting huge. And that's what she said. And I got to get this done. Anyway, if you want to send me email and you want to tell me about how much your website hosting sucks because you're only paying $3 a month for it, you can do that. You can send that email to God. That's dog spelled backwards. God at CYNLIBSOC.com on the fucking interwebs. All right. Whoops. I can't throw that. It's got my notes on it. I can't throw that across the room. I need that. And that's what she said to me. In the control room over there, the lovely and adorable Randy. Randy knows what the fuck cPanel is, and she would never buy website hosting for $3 a month, would you? Of course not, because you're not stupid. And today is 17th of... Randy, what month? May, thank you. 17th of May, 2016. I finally figured out what year it is. I got that part down at least. All right, we are on... Where the fuck are we at? We're on page 125. Yeah, this is where I stopped because, oh god, there's a lot to read here. Okay, and then the ephemeral section. I like that word, ephemeral. All right, batten down the hatches. We are still, this is part three in a series, we're reading and talking about the book Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World by Bruce, if I can learn to talk, I still don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. I called him Schneider in the first podcast, but there's not a D in his name. Schneiner? Schneier is how that's pronounced. Of course, you can find the book easily enough. The title's Data and Goliath. Type it into a search engine, it'll come up. Also, if I remember, in the show notes for this, I'm going to put a link, providing I can find them on the interwebs, to some episodes of the Cato Daily podcast, where they talk about things related to internet privacy. And they're kind of old podcasts because I'm way behind in listening to things, but they're still relevant. So we'll see if that happens. If the links are there, then it happened. And if the links are not in the show notes, that means it didn't happen. Also, speaking of that, YouTube is once again not showing my videos to anybody on the planet Earth because of the theme song for Stating the Obvious, which is the song You Know I'm Right by David Gilmour off his 1984 album About Face. And the corporation that owns David Gilmour's music fluctuates between banning my videos and not banning my videos because his music is in there. So this is, I think, the second, maybe third time my videos have been banned, which is, again, as I keep telling you, why I don't invest very much in social media. It's a complete fucking waste of time, because whatever you do on social media can be taken away from you by the corporations at any fucking moment. Well, the corporations or Anita Sarkeesian, because she can ban everything you do on Twitter. This is why I don't waste much. I spend a little bit. I don't waste much of my life on social media, because it's a fucking waste of your life. Okay, let's get on with reading the book, Data and Goliath. We're on chapter 10, page 125. It's called Privacy. The most common misconception about privacy is that it's about having something to hide. Quote, if you aren't doing anything wrong, then you have nothing to hide, unquote, the saying goes, with the obvious implication that privacy only aids wrongdoers. And this is true. And the reason I'm going to read all of this to you, I'm about to read to you 4 full pages. I'm going to read all of this and talk about it because there are so many people where this is exactly the thing. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. You have nothing to fear. And the stupid people, the 99%, they really cannot understand why other people would want privacy. Now, of course, they want privacy, right? The stupid people who say that, when you say to them, well, then would you write down your social security number and your credit card number for me? They'll say no. And then you say, but if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide, right? And, you know, there are many arguments we as anarcho-capitalists can make. Like, we can present a structured argument for the non-aggression principle or why taxation is theft. And occasionally you can get through. I have never in my life I personally have never been able to come up with an argument sufficiently structured that I could get a fucking stupid, fucking worthless piece of shit, 99% or piece of garbage that should be exterminated, to understand that people who want privacy are not criminals. I mean, the government has done such a fantastically wonderful job of indoctrinating these stupid, inferior people with the idea that if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, and if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide, and that privacy is only for criminals. I mean, this is one of the most thoroughly indoctrinated pieces of bullshit that has ever been unleashed upon the 99%. I personally find it very difficult to make any progress in this conversation with a fucking statist. Right? The taxation is theft and voting is violence. I mean, I can make some progress on those fronts. I've never converted anybody. I've told you before, you can't convert a statist. A statist is mentally, emotionally, intellectually inferior to an anarchist. It's like trying to teach a dog how to do open heart surgery. You can't do it. It's a waste of your time. You cannot do the same thing with a statist. But you can sometimes make a little bit of progress with a statist. I have never in my life made progress on privacy with a fucking statist. And he structures his argument in this section really fucking well. It's outright brilliant. And I'm going to read this to you because it's brilliant, and also because it's going to encourage you to go, God damn, that was pretty fucking brilliant. Maybe I should read this whole book, because you should read this whole book. Okay, here we go. As soon as I finish scratching my back. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. All right. If you think about it, though, This makes no sense. And of course, the statist doesn't think about it. That's why this makes sense to a statist. We do nothing wrong when we make love, go to the bathroom, or sing in the shower. We do nothing wrong when we search for a job without telling our current employer. Actually, some people would argue that that is wrong, but those people are idiots. Remember, the time to start looking for a job is as soon as you get a job. When you get a job, that's when you start looking for the next job. Whatever. It's true. We do nothing wrong when we seek out private places for reflection or conversation, when we choose not to talk about something emotional or personal, when we use envelopes for our mail, or when we confide in a friend and no one else. Moreover, even those who say that don't really believe it. In a 2009 interview, Google CEO Eric Schmidt put it this way, quote, "If you have something you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place," unquote. But in 2005, Schmidt banned employees from talking to reporters at CNET because a reporter disclosed personal details about Schmidt in an article. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg declared in 2010 that privacy is no longer, quote, "social norm," unquote, but bought the four houses abutting his Palo Alto home to help ensure his own privacy. There are a few secrets we don't tell someone, and we continue to believe something in private even after we believe something is private, even after we've told that person. We write intimate letters to lovers and friends, talk to our doctors about things we wouldn't tell anyone else, and say things in business meetings we wouldn't say in public. We use pseudonyms to separate our professional selves from our personal selves, or to safely try out something new. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg showed a remarkable naivety. I'm so pissed off about this $3 a month web hosting. Fuck. Jesus Christ fucking people. Shit. Fucking retards. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg showed a remarkable when he stated, quote, "You have one identity. The days of you having a different image for your work friends or coworkers and the other people you know are probably coming to an end pretty quickly. Having two identities for yourself is an example of a lack of integrity," unquote. Jesus fucking Christ, a statist is going to talk about integrity. No, you can be a different person to different people. The fact that Zuckerberg is too stupid to understand this illustrates why he was so successful at creating a social media platform which is so attractive to the stupidest people on earth. Because if you look on Facebook, that is where you will find. If you could correlate, here's what would be an interesting study. If we could get, because everybody's data is on Facebook, if we could correlate the information of how often people post and like things on Facebook, and then correlate that to their IQs. I don't have the data. I'm just throwing out my thesis. My thesis is the lower the IQ, the more engagement with Facebook. That's my thesis. I would love to see that data. The idea that you would be the same person at work that you would be around your mother-in-law, that you would be around your mother, that you would be around your girlfriend, that you would be around your male friends, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And it's stupid. I mean, I'm trying to puzzle out in my mind how much of a social retard you would have to be to think that people are supposed to behave exactly the same regardless of who they're around. As I said before, the way I'm ranting right now, like the way I'm screaming about $3 a month website hosting, if I were actually talking to this person about it, I wouldn't scream in their face that they're a fucking idiot. I would simply show them a cPanel, and I would fucking show them their shit, and I would like show them how easy it is to do something on cPanel and how fucked it up it is to do on their shit, and then I would point to the fact that their website doesn't work about one third of the fucking time, and I would logically attempt to persuade them to fucking spend a little bit more than $3 a month on website hosting. But on this podcast, where you come here to hear me ranting and raving about statist, and if that's not what you're here for, and I don't know why the fuck you're listening to this, get a goddamn life, get some friends, go do something, right? If you're not here to listen to me fucking screaming fuck you and cunt and statist and motherfucker and Jesus fucking H. Christ on a fucking stick and fucking 99% and fucking social retard and fucking natural selection, if that's not what you're here for, I don't know why you're here. So I'm different people depending on the fucking circumstances. And I would say that normal people inherently just understand why that works and do that and don't even think twice about it. It's not a lack of integrity, Fuckerberg. It's not a lack of integrity. You're just a fucking idiot there, Mr. Fuckerberg. We're not the same to everyone we know and meet. We act differently when we're with our families, our friends, our work colleagues, and so on. We have different table manners at home and in a restaurant. We tell different stories to our children than to our drinking buddies. It's not necessarily that we're lying, although sometimes we do. It's that we reveal different facets of ourselves to different people. That's an excellent phrasing of it. That's why I'm reading this part to you in full. Different facets of ourselves to different people. See, he gets it. He understands. That is exactly what's going on. And the fact that Fuckerberg doesn't understand this, it is what it is. Fuckerberg is a social retard. He's probably emotionally retarded as well. That's why he created Facebook. He didn't have any friends. This is something innately human. Privacy is what allows us to act appropriately in whatever setting we find ourselves. In the privacy of our home or bedroom, we can relax in a way that we can't when someone else is around. Privacy is an inherent human right. Now, of course, you all know I won't disagree with the existence of rights, but again, we're not nitpicking, and the guy's not an anarcho-capitalist, and not even necessarily a philosopher, although I think he is philosophizing right here and doing it pretty well, so you know we can nitpick about rights, but just fucking go with it, okay? Privacy is an inherent human right and a requirement for maintaining the human condition with dignity and respect. Now, I don't think you can argue with the second point because, and I'm pretty sure, I haven't read this in a while, but I think he's going to make the same fucking point. I think that what I'm about to say is what I got from reading this book. I'm pretty sure it's not original thought. When you strip people of their privacy, you strip them of their human dignity. It is about choice and having choice. Remember, choice. Choice means more than just killing an unborn child. Because if you listen to the feminists, there's only one choice on the planet Earth. That's the choice to kill children. And of course, it's not a choice because if you don't kill the unborn child, then you're fucked up. Right? So that's the only choice. But he's right. It's about more than just choice. This is about more than just abortion. It is about choice and having the power to control how you present yourself to the world. Internet ethnographer, I don't even know what an ethnographer is, and I don't really care, Dana Boyd And Dana Boyd is in all capital letters. Like, normally when somebody's name is written, you would... I mean, I'm telling you this like you're stupid. You know how when you write a proper noun, you capitalize the first letters? The first letters are not capitalized. I don't know if that's a typo, or if this Dana Boyd person is one of these weird fuckers who's trying to be original and not capitalized. Who gives a shit? But I don't know what an ethnographer of the internet is, and I don't know what a Dana Boyd is. But whoever the fuck Dana Boyd is puts it this way. Quote, privacy doesn't just depend on agency. Being able to achieve privacy is an expression of agency. Unquote. And perhaps, it's just, perhaps, this is one reason the statist is not just opposed to privacy, but afraid of privacy, and labels anyone who wants or seeks privacy as a criminal. Because if privacy is tied to agency, and as we know, women do not have agency, they are objects, and most statists, not all of them, certainly, because if all statists were objects, then there'd be no statism, there are enough statists who are agents to make statism manifest in the world around us, but most statists are also objects, right? Think about welfare recipients. You can go out, you can take agency and go out and get a job, or you can be an object and sit in front of the television and wait for the welfare check to show up. You can utilize agency to go forth and solve problems, or you can be an object and wait for the government to fix the problems for you. So perhaps statists fear privacy because privacy is aligned with agency, and statists are, of course, terrified of agency. Unless it's the agency of the state giving the statist other people's stuff. Are we good? The power just glitched. We have been having multiple internet glitches today. And that was the first electricy. Gee fucking Christ. That was the first electricy glitch of the day, but there might be more. Who the hell knows? Back to reading. When we lose privacy, we lose control of how we present ourselves. We lose control of when something we say on Facebook to one group of people gets accidentally shared with another. And we lose complete control when our data is controlled by the government. Quote, how did he know that? We ask. How did I lose control of who knows about my traumatic childhood, my desire for tasteless humor, or my vacation to the Dominican Republic? You may know this feeling. You felt it when your mother friended you on Facebook or any other social networking site that used to be just you and your friends. Privacy violations are intrusions. There's a strong psychological basis for privacy. Biologist Peter Watts makes the point that a desire for privacy is innate. Mammals in particular don't respond well to surveillance. And I've talked about this somewhere. I don't remember when I talked about this, but I know I talked about this in regards to animals in zoos, right? Being watched all the time. They know they're animals. They know they're being observed. That's how they survive in the wild. That's why how they escape predators. Animals don't like being observed all the fucking time. And it will cause mental health problems in animals. It is. God damn it, it is. You people are so stupid. And look at people in London. Look at the British. More cameras than any place else on the planet Earth. Look how fucked up they are. We consider it a physical threat because animals in the natural world are surveilled by predators. Surveillance makes us feel like prey, just as it makes the surveillers act like predators. Psychologists, sociologists, philosophers, novelists, and technologists have all written about the effects of constant surveillance, or even just the perception of constant surveillance. Studies show that we are less healthy, both physically and emotionally. We have feelings of low self-esteem, depression, and anxiety. And of course, this is another reason for the state to encourage more surveillance. As we've gone through this before, if you have citizens who have healthy self-esteem, who are emotionally fit, then they don't need a state. They don't need the government. But if people have low self-esteem and depression and anxiety, well, then they need the government. They need medication. They need the pharmaceutical corporations. They need therapists. They need mental health counselors. They need all of these things that in a healthy society you would not need. Right? In a healthy society, you don't need therapists. You don't need mental health counselors. You don't need mood-altering medications. In a healthy society, none of those things would exist, and all the people who currently provide those things would die of starvation because nobody would pay them for their services anymore. So from the perspective of the state, more people who are emotionally, mentally broken is a better thing. Surveillance strips us of our dignity. It threatens our very selves as individuals. It's a dehumanizing tactic employed in prisons and detention camps around the world. You know, like Guantanamo Bay, that place that Obama was going to shut down when he became president, and yet 7 years into the rule of his lordship, the Messiah, the Savior, the first affirmative action president and the second coming of Jesus Christ, Hussein Obama, still there. Excuse me, I'm drinking mixed berry hot tea today. It's pretty delicious. Violations of privacy are not all equal. Context matters. There's a difference between a TSA officer finding porn in your suitcase and your spouse finding it. There's a difference between the police learning about your drug use and your friends learning about it. And violations of privacy aren't all equally damaging. Those of us in marginal social economic situations and marginalized racial, political, ethnic, and religious groups are affected more. Those of us in powerful positions who are subject to people's continual approval are affected more. The lives of some of us depend on privacy. Our privacy is under assault from constant surveillance. Understanding how this occurs is critical to understanding what's at stake. The ephemeral. This little section here is pretty brilliant. Just hold on. Throughout most of history, our interactions and conversations have been ephemeral. Ephemeral. It's the way we naturally think about conversation. Exceptions were rare enough to be noteworthy. A preserved diary, a stenographer transcribing a courtroom proceeding, a political candidate making a recorded speech. This has changed. Companies have fewer face-to-face meetings. Friends socialize online. My wife and I have intimate conversations by text message. We all behave as if these conversations were ephemeral, but they're not. They're saved in ways we have no control over. On-the-record conversations are hard to delete. Oliver North learned this way back in 1987 when messages he thought he had deleted turned out to have been saved by the White House PROFS notes system, an early form of email. Bill Clinton learned this a decade later when his conversational emails were provided to opposing counsel as part of Microsoft's antitrust litigation discovery process. And over 100 female celebrities learned it in 2014 when intimate self-portraits, I like that, otherwise called fucking naked pictures of yourself, some supposedly deleted, were stolen from their iCloud accounts and shared further and wider than they had ever intended. Yes, remember, girls, if you don't want people on the internet to see pictures of your asshole, then don't put pictures of your asshole on the internet. Because according to Mark Zuckerberg, privacy is a thing of the past. It's harder and harder to be ephemeral. Voice conversation is largely still unrecorded, but how long will that last? And I've had a job, at least one that I know about, where all of our conversations were monitored. There were cameras inside the office and microphones. I don't know if he was recording all of it. I mean, he must have been recording. I don't know. I mean, you don't have to record it. It could be live streaming to the internet, but I know it was live streaming to the internet because he would check in on us. Now, whether or not it was being recorded, I don't know. Retail store surveillance systems register our presence, even if we are doing nothing but browsing, and even if we pay for everything in cash. Some bars record the IDs of everyone who enters. I can't even buy a glass of wine on an airplane with cash anymore. Pervasive life records will make this much worse. Science fiction writer Charles Stross described this as the end of prehistory. We won't forget anything because we'll always be able to retrieve it from some computer's memory. This is new to our species and will be a boon to both future historians and those of us in the present who want better data for self-assessment and reflection. Having everything recorded and permanently available will change us both individually and as a society. And this is absolutely true. And this goes back to what I've talked about before, other people talked about, what's a fact, is the number of laws in existence are beyond any one person's comprehension. And so when people say stupid shit like, I'm not breaking the law, we all know this is bullshit. You cannot possibly be not breaking the law. There are so many laws. There is always a law that you are breaking. There's a book, it's three felonies a day, two felonies a day, something like that, right? I mean, here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, it's illegal to throw cardboard in the trash dumpster. There's not a person in Fort Collins who's never thrown cardboard in the trash dumpster. Every day of your life, you are doing things that are illegal. As more and more data is gathered about everything you do and stored, the day when the police, and I mean, the police already cruise Facebook looking for people who say or indicate that they have done something illegal. The day is coming when your digital records that record every fucking thing you do, every place you go, will eventually be used by the police. The state, in whatever form, to punish you for doing things illegal. I'm a little surprised this hasn't happened yet, but we know it's coming. With automobiles, they have computers in them, GPS system, the computer. The day when your car monitors how fast you're going, which it already does, monitors your location, which it already does if you have a newer one, it just correlates how fast you're going with the speed limit in that location and just automatically sends you a speeding ticket, right? The day is coming. Or perhaps the cars will have built-in governors and it just will not let you go faster than the speed limit in a given zone. Of course, now this may be circumvented if self-driving cars show up before that happens. But the day when your technology reports your illegal activities to the government so that you can be appropriately punished, that day is coming. Our perceptions and memories aren't nearly as sharp as we think they are. We fail to notice things, even important things. We misremember even things we are sure we recall correctly. We forget important things we were certain we never would. People who keep diaries know this. Old entries can read as if they were written by somebody else. I have already noticed how having a record of all my email going back 2 decades makes a difference in how I think about my personal past. Which I can certainly agree with. Also, I've talked about this before, going back through my email and clearing things out. And finding emails between myself and girls who I don't even remember. Like reading this email that's like, you know, Sarah or whatever. I'm going, who the fuck is Sarah? And I'm reading this and it's like, we're doing things. I'm like, my God, I don't even remember. It's not that I don't remember this specific event. I don't even remember this person at all. It's like aliens sucked me up and pulled the memories out of my head or sucked me off. I mean, it's like the memory of this person is gone. She tells you how fucking important she was. And it wasn't just one girl. It was multiple girls. I'm like, who the fuck are these people? One-fourth of American adults have criminal records. Even minor infractions can follow people forever and have a huge impact on their lives. And this is why many governments have a process for expurging criminal records after some time has passed. Losing the ephemeral means that everything you say and do will be associated with you forever. And again, this benefits the state because people with criminal records have a harder time getting a job. If you can't get a job, well, you have to be on welfare. If you're on welfare, now you're serving the state because you're a parasite on the state. You're going to vote for more welfare benefits because you're on welfare, right? Again, so the state cannot function if people don't need the state. The statist, and the people who benefit from statism do not want people to be able to get jobs and support themselves. They want people to be on welfare. They want people to need the government to provide for them and protect them. Having conversations that disappear as soon as they occur is a social norm that allows us to be more relaxed and comfortable and to say things we might not say if a tape recorder were running. And of course, there's people like me. I do this podcast and put on the internet, you know, where I sit here and I talk about how stupid people should be allowed to die via natural selection. But, you know, normal people don't say things like that on the internet. Over the longer term, forgetting and misremembering is how we process our history. Forgetting is an important enabler of forgiving. Individual and societal memory fades, and past hurts become less sharp. This helps us forgive past wrongs. Some past hurts, of course, don't become forgotten and less sharp. Some of them are constantly shoved down our throats. We're talking here, of course, about the race card and slavery and the way that black people have to... this is exactly why black people... I shouldn't say black people. This is why a significant portion of black people, especially the statist ones and the left-wing ones, constantly fucking harp on racism. Slavery, specifically. Because, we cannot forget. We don't want to forget, because if white people forget about slavery, which happened over 100 years ago, then some black people might have to go get some jobs and actually work for a living. I'm not convinced that my marriage would be improved by the ability to produce transcripts of old arguments. Losing the ephemeral will be an enormous social and psychological change, and not one I think our society is prepared for. Brilliant observations. Moving on to page 141. this idea that recording everything is a good idea. You know, it's not for the reasons he makes. Just forget shit sometimes. It's fine. You don't need to remember every goddamn fucking thing. Page 141. Here we're talking about cybersecurity. And if you're going to remember anything, remember this. Okay? This is what you need to remember. $3 a month website hosting fucking sucks, all right? Spend a little goddamn bit more money, you fucking cheap bastard. That's what you need to fucking remember. Right now, both on the internet and with computers in general, the attacker has the advantage. This is true for several reasons. And this is why I'm reading this with people. Well, it's computer security, and it's a secure computer. It's secure. No, I've said it before. No, there's no fucking such thing as a secure computer. Burton Fredley, I want my computer to be secure from the internet. Well, then unplug it from the fucking internet. That's the only way you can have a computer that is secure. But even that's not secure, because if somebody can physically access the computer, they can still get the data. The computer's powered on, you stick on a fucking USB drive and you get the shit. Right? If you fucking turn the computer off, you pull out the fucking hard drive. About the only truly secure computer data is if it's on an encrypted hard drive and the computer ain't turned on. That might be it. That might be it. Other than that, there's virtually no fucking way any information on a computer is secure. That is a goddamn fantasy. That is the biggest fucking masturbatory. That is more of a masturbatory fantasy than me fantasizing about having sex with the CSU women's volleyball team, which I do on pretty much an hourly basis. There is nothing, no digital information on a fucking computer. I don't know where digital information would be if it wasn't on a computer. I guess it could be on a USB stick. It's almost impossible to secure. You can encrypt the fuck out of it, but remember, to use the information that is encrypted, to do anything with it, you have to unencrypt it. And once it's unencrypted, well, now it's not encrypted anymore. Once it's not encrypted, there are multiple ways for people to get a hold of that information. Okay, so why does the attacker have the advantage? It's easier to break things than to fix them. Complexity is the worst enemy of security, and our systems are getting more complex all the time. The nature of computerized systems makes it easier for the attacker to find one exploitable vulnerability in a system than for the defender to find and fix all vulnerabilities in the system. An attacker can choose a particular attack and concentrate his efforts, whereas the defender has to defend against every possibility. Software security is generally poor. We simply don't know how to write secure software and create secure computer systems. Yes, we keep improving, but we're still not doing very well. Computer security is very technical, and it's easy for average users to get it wrong and subvert whatever security they might have. You know, a good example of this is with Linux. It has IP tables, which is the firewall of Linux. And I am not a programmer, I'm not a computer genius, but I can get my way around a computer good enough. I mean, I can do things like compile my own kernels and shit like that, right? And Windows, I still haven't figured IP tables out. I have no fucking clue about 99% of fucking IP tables. Because it's powerful, and that also means it's complex. Page 146, what the hell's going on 146? Maintaining an insecure internet. Here, Randy, how are we on time? Thank you. Perfect. This should work out just about right. I wonder if it's going to rain some more or just keep keeping, just keep being cloudy outside. Okay. So why do we have an insecure internet? Well, we have an insecure internet because of the government and the NSA. And here are four reasons we have an insecure internet thanks to statism. Stockpiling vulnerabilities in commercial software that we use every day rather than making sure those security flaws get fixed. So the government, the NSA, looks for security flaws in computer software. And then they have a thing, it's called zero-day vulnerabilities. If the NSA, say for example, finds a security vulnerability in Internet Explorer, they look at how likely they think it is somebody else is going to find this vulnerability. If they think it's pretty likely other people discover the vulnerability, then they'll tell Microsoft, hey, we found this vulnerability, here it is. But when they find vulnerabilities that they think it's unlikely other governments and hackers will discover, they don't tell anybody. They hold on to those for themselves so that they can explain. I know you're saying this doesn't really happen because Obama's the president and he cares about poor people, and I know I'm a racist and I'm sexist and I'm homophobic and Donald Trump and KKK, and I know you're denying that what I'm saying is true because you're a fucking 99%er and you should be exterminated, but unfortunately natural selection has been circumvented and you're kept alive by the government who needs stupid people like you who will disbelieve shit which is actually fucking true. But the NSA finds these vulnerabilities and they hold on to them so that in the future, the NSA might need that vulnerability to break into computer systems. So the government, by stockpiling these zero-day vulnerabilities, ensures that they don't get fixed. Reason number two, inserting backdoors into widely used computer hardware and software products. Again, you can deny, you can pretend it's not real, nobody gives a fuck. The government goes to the corporations and says, right? I mean, they're doing Apple right now. With Apple, they want to encrypt the shit for us, right? The government goes to the corporations and says, hey, we want you to put back doors in your hardware and software so that we can get in. Again, there's lots of examples in this book of corporations that he knows, that his research has shown, put in back doors for the governments. And I mean governments, it's not the only United States, right? This is something he points out. We buy all this hardware from China, right? Hardware, computer hardware. Who knows? There's no fucking way to know what kind of, because remember, you call it hardware, but the hardware all has software built into it, CMOS and your ROMs and all this other shit. Just like a CPU, right? With the upcoming thing where Microsoft is getting CPU manufacturers to encode instructions in their chips so that their CPUs will not run with a version of Windows other than Windows 10 or greater, hopefully greater, right? Who knows? Okay. So we buy all this computer buy all of this computer hardware from China. Who fucking knows what backdoors they've put in there? Like your iPhones and your Android phones manufactured in China. Who fucking knows what the Chinese manufacturers have inserted into those devices because the government told them to? Or maybe the Chinese government, maybe they wanted to do it. Who? No, you don't. You have no way of knowing. You have no way of knowing what kind of government or corporate, and which governments and which corporations have back doors in your hardware and software. You don't know. Number three, undermining encryption algorithms and standards. Right, the government wants security, but the government just doesn't want anybody to have encryption that they can't break. Well, you, as he points out in this book multiple times, you can have secure encryption, or you cannot have secure encryption, right? You can have encryption that's secure, or you can have encryption that's secure except when the government wants to break it to make sure you're not doing anything wrong. Well, that's not secure encryption. And then, of course, there is number four, hacking the internet. And as he talks about in here, the NSA masquerading as Facebook, and apparently the NSA also masquerades as LinkedIn. I've talked about that before, where the NSA sets up these fake servers that pretend to be Facebook, and you log on, and they can get your information, and they download shit to your computer. Apparently they masquerade as LinkedIn as well. I mean, the NSA is running around the internet, hacking people's computers, installing spyware, setting up fake servers. The NSA is doing it. You know, other governments are doing it. All of this contributes to the internet being insecure. Page 151. In Chapter 9, I discussed how the NSA's activities harm U.S. economic interest. It also harms the country's political interest. Political scientist Ian Bremer has argued that public revelations of the NSA's activities, quote, have badly undermined U.S. credibility with many of its allies, unquote. U.S. interests have been significantly harmed on the world stage as one country after another has learned about our snooping on its citizens or its leaders. Friendly countries in Europe, Latin America, and Asia. Relations between the U.S. and Germany have been particularly strained as when it became public the NSA was tapping the cell phone of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. And Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff, which I'm totally mispronouncing, turned down an invitation to a U.S. state dinner, the first time any world leader did that, because she and the rest of her country were incensed at the NSA surveillance. Now, what's interesting about that is, remember, one of the advantages of electing Obama, in addition to, you know, he has black skin, is that Obama was going to restore the credibility of the United States on the quote-unquote world stage. Because it's so important what other countries think about the United States. That's our number. Oh, God, you know what I'm sick of hearing? I heard this the other day in a restaurant, overheard this. People talking about how Europeans are so interested in our elections. I've said it before, I'll say it again. People in Europe don't give a fuck about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. They're worried about all of their women being raped by Muslims. Okay? This fucking obsession you people have with thinking that people in other countries are obsessed with the presidential election like you are. They're not. They don't give a fuck. All people in other countries want is for your fucking government to stop spying on them. That's probably the only time they ever think that, or when, you know, Hussein Obama is murdering people in their country with flying robots or dropping bombs on them.